do please reach behind you and get a Bible. If a Bible isn't there, it means that someone behind you has already taken it. So take your neighbours before they spot it. And turn up page 959. And two for the price of one this morning, two Bible passages, which Nick is going to come to read to us now. So do please follow it as he does. You can see there what they are. They are Mark 10, 46 to 52, and Mark 11, 12 to 26. So, Nick, over to you.
Okay. Then they came to Jericho, as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. And it's Mark 11, 12 to 25. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "Is it not written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of robbers?" The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. When evening came, Jesus and his disciples went out of the city. In the morning, as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. Peter remembered and said to Jesus, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered." "Have faith in God," Jesus answered. "Truly I say to you, if you say to the mountain, 'Go, throw yourself into the sea,' and do not doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will happen, it will be done for you. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins."
Thanks very much, Nick. What does success look like? Who's that? The universally popular Philip Green, whose net worth in 2016 was estimated to be £6.2 billion. Lucky fellow. Has lots of money. Is that what success is? Is that what success looks like? Well, maybe it looks like this. Who are they? No cycling fans in the congregation. Come on, who are these people? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I was despairing of the Good Shepherd mission there for a sec. They were called Laura Trott and Jason Kenny. They're now called Laura Kenny and Jason Kenny because not only did they win medals in Rio 2016, they got married the same year. Is that what success looks like? Or maybe it looks like this. You fight a temperate, courteous, and kind campaign and eventually end up with your finger on the nuclear trigger. What does success look like for a church? That is a picture of Lakewood Church in Texas, reckoned to be the largest church congregation in the world. It averages 52,000 people per week attending its services. Its pastor, Joel Osteen, is very wealthy, very prominent in the media. The church meets in a huge building and is, as you can see, often packed out. What does success look like? Well, Jesus comes into the temple in today's passage to find it busy. People are buying and selling livestock for sacrifice in the temple. Others are taking goods through the temple. It would have been a hive of activity, just the sort of hustle and bustle that many churches would long for. What does Jesus do? Well, he drives out the buyers and sellers. He prevents people from carrying stuff through the temple, and he overturns the tables of the moneylenders. Jesus does not see success, but disgraceful failure. And around that, he encounters a blind man and curses a fig tree. What's going on here? Well, let's recap the story so far. Jesus has been doing miracles and teaching people for a little while now. He's been called the Messiah, which means the one who will save his people. But no one really knows how he's going to, what that looks like. He refers to himself as the Son of Man, which is a loaded term. It's a character name in the Old Testament for someone who comes in judgment and in power. And now he's coming to Jerusalem, where the Jewish leaders are and where the Romans are gathered. It's at the time of Passover. It's a time of great symbolism for the Jews. So here's this guy. He's the Messiah. He's coming at a time of symbolism. The Romans are there. The Jews are there. Something's going to happen. There's electricity in the air. The authorities are on high alert and trouble is brewing. And at first, things don't quite go as expected. For someone who's on a mission to save his people, you wouldn't expect him to take time to deal with a blind beggar. And nor would the crowd. They tell the beggar to be quiet. Jesus shouldn't be bothered with people like that. But Jesus stops and calls him over. He heals him and gets a new follower. We're told that Bartimaeus follows him on his way once he's healed. Then he comes to Jerusalem and he's hungry. He sees a fig tree in full leaf. Now that's normally, I'm not a farmer, that's normally a sign, as I understand it, that the tree would be producing figs. But no, it's not the season. So Jesus curses the fig tree, and when he comes back the next day, the fig tree has withered away. A bit random, you might think. And Jesus comes to the temple. What should be a place of prayer has turned into a marketplace. You can't hear yourself think. And worse, people are being conned. Sharp practices are going on. People are even using the temple as a shortcut. Look at verse 16 of chapter 11. People are carrying things through the temple. And Jesus goes nuts. He creates a huge disturbance. This doesn't go down well with the temple authorities because they're afraid. Electricity's in the air. It's Passover. He's got lots of people following him. Anything could happen. So they start trying to find ways to bring him down. Now, why does Jesus stop for the beggar, curse the fig tree, and drive the merchants out of the temple? Well, it all comes down to the same thing. Jesus is looking for a response of faith. He's looking for faith in God. You see, Bartimaeus gets it. He cries out to Jesus for help. And when he's told to shut up, he cries out all the louder. He's desperate for Jesus to intervene in his life, to heal him of his blindness. But look at chapter 10. He calls Jesus something strange. He doesn't call him Jesus. He calls him Son of David. It's like he sees something more in him, something in Jesus that talks of the long-held hope of the Jews for someone who'll come to save his people. So Jesus calls him over. He calls him over, and he throws off his cloak. Bartimaeus throws off his cloak because he wants to move quickly. He cares less about his cloak than meeting with Jesus. Jesus heals him, and he puts it down to his faith, to his relying on Jesus. And Bartimaeus doesn't leave it there. He wasn't just looking for Jesus to give him what he wanted and then walk off. He wants to follow Jesus. So he does. Bartimaeus went against the crowd, telling him to shut up. He threw off his cloak, one of the few possessions he would have had, and he followed Jesus. He had faith. But the place you'd expect to find faith, in the temple, the place where the Jews went to worship God, is the place Jesus doesn't find faith. Instead, he finds people doing business, buying and selling animals for sacrifice, changing money so people could pay the temple tax. Lots of activity, but activity to make people rich. Not worshiping God, but achieving their own purpose and using God's temple as a way of doing it. And Jesus says, you've missed the point. This is meant to be a place that you come before God in prayer, in faith. And worse, you've twisted it. Not only are you not coming to pray, you're coming to steal and cheat. So he throws them out. And that's what the fig tree thing is all about. You see, we don't get it because we don't know our Old Testament as well as the Jews did then. But the fig tree is a picture of God's people. It's used in the Old Testament book of Jeremiah to talk about God's people. And the fig tree that Jesus sees is full of leaves. That means it should have fruit on it, because if there are leaves, there should be fruit. But there aren't. And it's the same with the temple. If there are lots of people and lots of activity, there should be faith. But there isn't. Jesus curses the fig tree as a sign of him rejecting the activity in the temple. There's no fruit on the tree. There's no faith in the temple. Jesus wanted to find fruit on the tree, and he wanted to find faith in the temple. He found neither and reacted angrily. What does this mean for us? Well, I want to speak to those of us who don't call ourselves Christians, who don't call ourselves followers of Jesus, and those that do. For those of you who aren't followers of Jesus, there's great news here. Jesus doesn't mind who you are, how much money you have, how popular you are, or how important you are. He only looks for faith. Jesus looks for faith here. These are bishops in the House of Lords. You would think that God would be particularly impressed with them. They're important. They're part of Parliament. They have access to important people. They are important people. But in this story, Jesus finds faith here. He doesn't mind that Bartimaeus doesn't use posh language. He's not fussed by his appearance or the fact that he's blind. He's not bothered that Bartimaeus is the lowest of the low. He calls him, he deals with his blindness, and he identifies his faith. Let's define faith. What is faith? We might say to someone who's feeling low to have faith. We might tell someone who needs encouragement that we have faith in them. But in the Bible, faith is much more than that. There's a story I've told many times here, and it bears retelling. When the Bible was being translated into the Arctic languages, the languages of the Eskimo, of the Inuit, the translator who was working with the tribes there couldn't find the right word for believe. He needed to translate the word believe into these Inuit languages, couldn't find the right word. And one day, he followed a group of Inuit hunters going onto the ice to hunt for seals in early winter. And he saw how this group, this hunting group, sent the youngest member of the hunting party onto the ice to bounce up and down to see if the ice would hold the weight of the hunting party. So they sent this bloke to bounce up and down. And he said, what's the word for that? What's the word for going onto the ice, bouncing up and down, and seeing if it would bear your weight? That's the word that's used in the Inuit Bible for believe, for trusting your whole weight to the ice. And it's the same when it comes to faith. It means trusting all of your weight to something. You see, when you go ice hunting, you can't stay on the shore. You have to go onto the ice. You have to trust your weight to the ice. When you become a Christian, you can't stay looking on. You have to trust your life to Jesus. You have to acknowledge that you have a problem, that you've done things which are bad, that you're not perfect. You have to acknowledge there's nothing you can do to fix your problem. If you're corrupt, and we all are, then you can't make yourself pure. you hear there's a consequence for that. The consequence that you're separated from God for all eternity. From God, from whom all good things flow. God, who you were made to spend eternity with. God, who can make you whole and mend you. No one else can do that. To be away from God means you're away from all good things, from the person you were made to spend eternity with, and away from the only person who can fix you. And the Bible calls that hell. And then you hear the good news that you don't need to be separated from God at all, that someone else was separated from God in your place, that the only man who ever lived a perfect existence was executed for you so that you might live. Here's the thing. If you go to Sainsbury's down the road when it's open, and you get to the counter with a full trolley, and you've forgotten your money, you can't pay. You have to put everything back. Now imagine the person behind you in the queue says that he will pay for everything in your trolley, and he uses the money that he would have used to pay for his own groceries. Your shopping is paid for, but he has to go hungry. When Jesus died for you, he paid the price we should have paid, but at his own cost. He was separated from God for the first time in eternity so that we needn't be. That's the good news of the gospel. And what we have to do is to follow Jesus, to commit our lives to him, to make him our boss, to go where he goes, to leave aside our own plans and follow him. That's what the Bible calls having faith, to trust our weight fully to the ice, to commit fully to Jesus. If you're not a follower of Jesus today, there is great news, a great offer, if you will have faith. For those of us who call ourselves Christians, who are regular churchgoers, there's a warning here. We love it. We love it when this church is full of people. People come in and worship God and listen to his word. We feel things are going right when that happens. But God looks for faith. He looks for the words we sing to be backed by a real commitment in the lives of the people singing them. He hears people committing themselves to him in prayer, and he sees if that commitment is just words. Jesus taught elsewhere in the Bible in a famous passage called the Sermon on the Mount in the following terms. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. You see, if you sit in a garage and you go vroom, vroom, it doesn't make you a car. If you sit on a branch and swivel your head a lot and go twit, twoo, it doesn't make you an owl. If you sit in church and do not have the faith that Jesus requires, it doesn't make you a Christian. The fig tree had plenty of leaves, but no fruit. The appearance has to be matched by reality. Otherwise, there's a risk that if any of us avoid making the commitment to Jesus that he calls us to, then he will reject us as he did the fig tree. Have faith, he says, have faith. Now consider this. The temple in Jerusalem was a place that was designed to be where God was. It was built with God's blessing. It wasn't always a den of robbers. How did it become a place of sharp dealing? A shortcut for people to carry stuff through? Well, could I suggest that it happened gradually? On day one, people didn't go from holy to disgusting. It took time. The story is told of a Canada goose flying south for the winter across the plains of North America. For whatever reason, it got separated from the rest of its flock. But as the goose flew, it spied the pond of Farmer Jones. Farmer Jones had Toulouse geese in his pond. Now, Toulouse geese are a heavy breed. They're so heavy that they don't fly. The Canada goose, even though it was a different shape and color than the other geese in the pond, soon found that it was accepted and became part of the flock. It stayed for a day, then for a week, then for a month, then it turned into the whole winter. Farmer Jones was married to a kind and gentle wife. Every day she would take a bucket of corn out to the pond and would feed the geese. The Canada goose enjoyed the lifestyle. Finally, spring was approaching and the wild geese were flying north again. The goose looked up. He could hear the honks of geese flying by, and he was stirred with a strange thrill to join his old comrades in flight. But try as he might, he could not get off the ground. He'd become so soft and heavy that he could not rise to be with his old friends and family. So he dropped back to the pond again and said to himself, "Oh well, my life is safe here and the food is good." But every autumn and every spring, when he heard the wild geese honking overhead, his eyes would gleam for a moment and he would flap his wings. He did this for many years until one day he paid no attention to them. We're called to have faith in God, to commit ourselves to him fully. But I've seen something happen in the lives of people who haven't quite ever got round to it, and little by little start to make compromises and get comfortable. They call themselves Christians, but actually there's nothing about them to make them different from anyone around them. They're trusting in their wealth, or their success, or their family, or what they do at church to make them okay. Is that you? Be warned. Jesus' last miracle before his resurrection is a curse, not a blessing. He curses the fig tree for showing signs of life, but having none. When his disciples call his attention to the fig tree, what does he say? He says, "Have faith." So let us commit our bodies fully to the ice. Let us commit ourselves fully to Jesus, not just on a Sunday, but on other days. It involves throwing other things aside, like Bartimaeus did with his cloak. We can say we'll do it, but the test is whether or not we actually do it. What are we to make of this? Well, for the person who will hear Jesus and have faith, his gospel is great news and the key to eternal life, whoever you are, whatever your life situation. But for us, for others, well, since I started attending this church 23 years ago, I've played lots of music, I've preached, I've led Thursday Club, I've been part of the pastoral care team, I've led a small group, I've organized the food bank effort, and I've been on the leadership team all at various times. None of that is any good, unless I have faith. If there's no fruit on the tree, it gets thrown into the fire. So what does success look like? It doesn't look like numbers in church on a Sunday. It doesn't look like nice music and earnest prayers. It's measured by the saving faith that we either have or we don't have. Here's the thing. If you're in a building which is on fire, you can listen to the fire alarm, you can marvel at its craftsmanship, and you can admire the noise it makes or moan about it. But unless you act on it and get out, your life is at risk. Let's be doers of God's word today and not just hearers. Let's respond to the great offer Jesus gives us and heed his warning. And let us commit our bodies to the ice. Let us commit ourselves to Jesus. Let us have faith.